From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As we go to air Monday morning, 3 in 5 Illinoisans, ages 12 and up anyway, are now fully vaccinated against COVID-19. But in some parts of the state, like southern Illinois, that figure is much lower, and hospitals in the region have been at capacity in their critical care units. And while Illinois may be on the downward side of the Delta variant surge, the pandemic is still very much a threat. According to the Illinois Department of Public Health, there are at least 257 active school outbreaks in Illinois. Meanwhile, Pfizer announced it's prepared to submit data to the FDA showing its vaccine is safe and effective for children ages 5 through 11. And there are guidelines for who among the fully vaccinated will be eligible for booster shots. Joining us now to talk about the latest with COVID-19 in Illinois is Mitchell Armantrout, staff reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. Mitchell, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks so much for having me. It's an honor.
Christine Herman is health reporter for Illinois Public Media and Side Effects Public Media. Good morning and welcome to you, Christine.
Good morning, Brian.
And Eric Stock is a reporter for NPR member station WGLT in Bloomington Normal. Eric, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, Mitchell, I'm going to begin with you. You've been covering COVID rates across Illinois. Where are we now in terms of the Delta variant surge?
Well, we've kind of gotten to this little eye of the storm. Things are looking pretty good right now. Right around the 4th of July, things were looking great. I mean, positivity was down below 1% across the state. Cases were hitting basically all-time lows, and then Delta popped up, and it was as bad as we had seen it since last fall, which was the worst we'd ever seen it. So now for about 3 straight weeks now, cases are falling back down. Positivity is heading in the right direction, and, more hospital beds are opening up, which is a good thing. But just talking to some experts, obviously, it's the same concern as last year. You know, it's kind of this unknown heading into another flu season. And, even though, this Delta surge is sort of contained for the moment, we're kind of waiting to see what it's going to be like once it gets cold, folks start heading back inside and spreading the virus a little more easily than they are right now. Now there's plenty of space for folks to be outside and enjoy the warmth the last few days of summer. But right now it's a positive, but we're kind of in a wait and see mode.
Yeah, and open windows. And we've been in this place before, as you indicated, with sort of a positive feeling. And Christine, this Delta surge is one of the reasons I think that people are more interested in these booster shots, right? And I understand you've been looking at that. Can you help us understand who is eligible for the booster shots? And really, are they necessary? What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of news coming up from the national level, FDA and CDC putting out guidance and recommendations. Last week the CDC presented data that shows, and this is important to point out before we talk about who needs the boosters, that the mRNA vaccines are still very good at preventing severe disease. That hasn't changed significantly over the past 6 months. Both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines give more than 90% protection for people under 65. It's some other groups, including people over 65, as well as people who live in long-term care settings, that the CDC is now recommending should receive a booster shot of the Pfizer vaccine at least 6 months after they got the second dose. So the guidance that was put out late last week, which state health officials in Illinois have announced they will be adopting, applies only to the Pfizer vaccine. So if you didn't get the Pfizer, this doesn't apply. There might be news coming soon because Moderna has also submitted for emergency use authorization for their boosters. But for now, what I'm going to share right now applies to people who received the Pfizer vaccine. People 65 and older and in long-term care settings should receive a booster shot, as well as people ages 50 to 64 who have an underlying medical condition. And then the CDC also recommends that other people may be considered for boosters if they are ages 18 to 49 with an underlying medical condition, or ages 18 to 64 who are at increased exposure to COVID due to their job. So it's a little bit unclear, and it can be confusing for people to decide, okay, am I in the should receive? Am I in the may receive a booster category? I would say probably the best guidance is to talk with your doctor if you want to find out if your underlying medical condition applies and puts you at higher risk and of, you know, hospitalization or infection, which would make you eligible for getting a booster shot.
Yeah. And I think the bottom line there, if at least if you are older than 65 or older, you got the Pfizer shot. It sounds like you are definitely in the should category. All others probably need to, as you said, talk with your personal physician to figure out where you fall and what's recommended for you. Eric, let me bring you into the conversation. Now, you've been reporting on COVID rates in and around Bloomington Normal. What's the latest on hospitalizations there?
Well, the hospitalization data has sort of a return to where it was last fall. We started getting bed capacity data from the two Bloomington Normal hospitals run by OSF Healthcare and Carle Health. Cases peaked there. We were getting hundreds of new cases a day at that point. They stopped presenting that data over the summer when it looked like the numbers were improving. You know, the vaccines were becoming more widespread. Positivity rates were going down. And then at the start of September, they started presenting those numbers again. We've had days where bed capacity and ICU capacity were down to sometimes 1, 2, and 3%. Now, the hospitals have shared this data pretty willingly, along with the data that shows a vast majority of their COVID patients are not vaccinated. It's over 80%. But they're also quick to say it's not the number of beds that matter as much as it is staff available to care for the patients. And they've been a little more reluctant to show that data. They generally say that staffing is a challenge, but they're managing and perhaps are trying not to discourage people from coming to the hospital if they have a health issue. Some hospital administrators were quick to say last year that many people stayed away from the hospital for fear of getting COVID or fear there wouldn't be a room for them. And that, of course, had negative consequences too.
And what about, I understand a significant percentage of the cases in your area are from children younger than 11. Can you talk about that? Is this a back to school surge?
Yeah, that appears to be the latest data that the McLean County Health Department presents a weekly on age breakdown shows that a fourth of those were in cases 11 and under. Of course, that's the group that is not yet eligible for the vaccine, but also a third of those cases of the last week involved school-aged children, 17 and under. And of course, young people have consistently made up a larger share of the cases we've seen since, you know, the start of school. And that's created an issue when it comes to quarantines and the outbreaks that you talked about at the beginning. And the school officials have generally said that it's not necessarily related to school activity in the classroom. Perhaps it's activities outside of school, birthday parties, sleepovers, where social contact may be harder to avoid. There may be less strict adherence to the COVID guidelines. But they've also presented data regarding vaccination rates among age groups. And that group is the 12 to 17 group, at least, is up over 50%. It's still lower than the older populations, of course. They've also had less time in which they've had access to the vaccine. But it is certainly a concern for parents and administrators that those number of cases are higher than the rest of the population. We've not seen data that show any rise in hospitalizations in young people. OSF, Children's Hospital in Peoria, last week reported they had one child within the last week that had been under their care, and they've had over 100 since the start of the pandemic. That is over a very large coverage area in central Illinois.
Still, though, it does go to show that children are not at no risk, as some people might think, for COVID-19. Let me take a moment to reintroduce Eric Stock. He's a reporter with WGLT in Bloomington Normal, Christine Herman from Illinois Public Media and Side Effects Public Media, and Mitchell Armantrout, staff reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times. We're talking about the latest with COVID-19 in Illinois. Christine, you've been reporting on how Illinois schools, K-12, are rolling out testing programs. How's that going?
Yeah, there were a handful of schools that back in the spring when they moved to hybrid instruction started rolling out programs to test as many students as possible every week, like once a week and twice a week in some cases for like student athletes and others who were involved in extracurriculars. And they had begun using the saliva test that was developed at the University of Illinois to test, you know, the college students and the faculty and staff here last summer. So now there are more than... there's 2 million K-12 students in Illinois, and about half of them attend schools that are rolling out weekly testing programs using that saliva test. And this is outside of Chicago. Chicago Public Schools are doing their own thing, which also involves weekly testing. But I started looking into, you know, some of these schools that are using the saliva test, and I got to visit one of the schools that was one of the early adopters, Hillside out. In like just outside the west side of Chicago, that has been doing this in their pre-K through 8 school since February. And it's sort of an extra, you know, they say it's an extra layer of protection on top of universal masking, on top of getting as many people vaccinated as possible. You know, Hillside staff, the superintendent told me they've got 90% of their staff vaccinated. They also installed better ventilation because we know that's really important for keeping, you know, an airborne virus from spreading indoors. And it's a big lift to roll out a testing program once a week. You know, at Hillside, it takes a few hours every Monday morning. It involves a couple staff, but they're able to tap into federal funding that's being channeled through the state to cover the cost of hiring COVID testers from a third-party group, you know, to come in and do all the sample collection, transport the samples to a lab, get it processed, and get the results returned. So it's a lot to pull off logistically, and I think that's one of the big barriers for a lot of schools that are trying to now get in on this. Mm-hmm. But once it's up and going, the idea is that they want to detect cases that, you know, as Eric mentioned, people might be contracting the virus out in public, you know, in their home settings or in the community, identifying those cases and getting them isolated before they spread.
Yeah, and you spoke with, you mentioned the school in Hillside. Kevin Suchinski is the superintendent, about why he thinks doing weekly testing of as many students as possible is worth it despite the extra effort.
What we say to ourselves is, if we don't do this program, we could be losing instruction because we'd have to close down the school. So for the testing program is another one of our layered mitigations to make sure that we stay open.
Yeah. So that's Superintendent Kevin Suchinski. And he said, you know, they involve their school nurses to do contact tracing. And that's a really important thing. Once you've got test results, you got to make sure that there's actually the follow up and that, you know, kids who've been exposed are notified in a timely manner. WBZ Sarah Karp did some reporting last week showing that in Chicago Public Schools, one of the big barriers or hurdles has been, they're doing this weekly testing in many schools. But then if the kids aren't being notified quickly, then it kind of is less valuable to have these tests being run if you're not also following up with robust contact tracing.
Only a few minutes left in our conversation. Mitchell, you have been looking at Southern Illinois vaccination rates and hospital capacities. A few weeks ago, you could not have gotten an ICU bed in that region if you were in critical condition. What are hospitals saying down there?
Well, they find themselves, like as they have for most of the last 18 months or so, in a tough spot. And it's really this constant struggle of misinformation that's out there about the vaccine, different conspiracy theories that float around Facebook and other social media sites about what is or isn't in the vaccine and what it will do to you. There's some counties in the southern seven, right on the southern tip of the state, where, you know, less than 1 in 5 folks have been vaccinated. That's down in Alexander County. And that's really what got us to the a really tough week about a week and a half ago, where we're, like you said, zero ICU beds were available for the whole region. And that's an area that's home to 400, I mean, almost 500,000 folks. There's 22 hospitals there, and when there's only 37% of folks vaccinated, those units filled up really quickly. So just talking to folks with Southern Illinois Healthcare, You know, they're sort of fighting two fights. It's the virus that's in their hospital wards that's, you know, overcrowding ICU or intensive care units. And like Eric said, I mean, it's not just an issue of it's not like some scene out of a movie, you know, with folks crammed into one hospital and folks being worked on in the hallways. I mean, it's an issue of manpower, first of all, because there's just not enough. There's been a lot of burnout among healthcare workers. Folks have been sort of, you know, after grueling 18 months, a lot of folks have just decided to switch career paths. And also talking with some other public health officials, the incoming classes of new healthcare workers has also been thrown off because education cycles have been totally thrown off over the last year. So they're trying their best to take care of folks who need it. But yeah, so for a full week, we saw some patients who needed intensive care. They had to be shipped off to St. Louis or Nashville, you know, sometimes 5 hours away. And the chances of, the odds of a good outcome for someone who has been in a car crash and now they need to be shipped off, you know, 5 hours away, that's not good for your prognosis. So hospital officials are battling that, but also just trying to get more folks vaccinated. I mean, that's really, it's been said a million times, but that's really the only way out of this. And
vaccination is the way this pandemic ends, as they say. Mitchell Armantrout is a reporter with the Chicago Sun-Times. We've also been speaking with Christine Herman, my colleague at Illinois Public Media, and also with Side Effects Public Media, and Eric Stock, a reporter for WGLT, the NPR, and 21st member station in Bloomington Normal. Thank you all so much for being with us today here on the 21st.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
More to come after a short break. We're going to be talking with a veterinarian about an attempt to get animals vaccinated against COVID-19. You're listening to the 21st. Stay with us.